Well, good morning, church. In here, at home, wherever you are, we are so honored that you're joining us. And I don't need to say it because you can already see it. It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas up here. And so I want to say a word of thanks to Jennifer and Jess and Bryce for helping put this together. And I joined in a little bit. I think a couple of those I was responsible for. Any of them that look like they're in a really bad spot, that was me. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm just looking for some blank areas. And I'm like, okay, I'll put it here. But I'm thankful that they took the time and they got that out. And if you're not here, if you're at home, they've got the lobby set up as well. And it just gives a little sense of normalcy in this odd time. It adds to the beauty. It adds to the reminder of the season we're in. And so I am thankful. I'm thankful for the job that Jennifer does and Bryce does and Jessica does and Mike does. I am thankful for our AV and sound people. I am thankful for all of those who keep doing the hard work to keep things going, like the praise team during this difficult time, because it is a difficult time in all aspects of our life. I know it's challenging for you in your work. I know it's challenging for those of you who are stuck at home, not able to see family and friends. And so little things keep us going. And I'm grateful for all of you for the ways that you do those little things to keep us going. And at this point, I want to invite you to listen to the word of the Lord from John 1 as Dusty and Alex Haynes read that for us.
From John 1:1, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was with God in the beginning. Through Him all things were made. Without Him nothing was made that has been made. In Him was life, and that life was the light of all mankind. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it.
The Word became flesh and made His dwelling among us. We have seen His glory, the glory of the one and only Son, who came from the Father, full of grace and truth.
All right, thank you. This is another, you get to see a peek behind the curtains, because sometimes videos that are made in one place and on one computer work just fine, and then they get on the computer that we run our service through, and we have some trouble. And so just another reason to say thanks to Rob and our AV team, because sometimes they have to work around at last minute to get things working. So that John 1 passage is one of my favorite Christmas passages from Scripture, which may seem like an odd thing to say, because as far as I remember, no one has ever made a Christmas pageant based on John 1. That's not the place we typically turn when we think of Christmas passages. So when we think of Christmas passages, you may not remember where they are, but you're probably thinking of Matthew's gospel. In Matthew's gospel, that's where you get the mysterious magi from the east, and they follow the star, and it leads them to the King of the Jews, Jesus. That's the stuff of a good Christmas card in Matthew's gospel. Now, Matthew's gospel also tells us about the mad King Herod, who is so jealous of any potential competition being born that he ends up giving an edict for all two-year-old males and below to be killed. By the way, that is not the stuff of a good Christmas card. Just in case you're counting at home, I would not send that one out. But that's the story in Matthew where eventually Joseph and Mary and Jesus, they have to flee to Egypt to get away from Herod. And it all sets up this beautiful image of Jesus as the new Moses, leading a new Exodus with a new law, brought down from God. Or when you think of Christmas stories, you might think of Luke's gospel, because Luke's gospel is the one that tells us about the shepherds in the field. And Luke's gospel is the one where we get the angel chorus singing glory to God in the highest. And Luke's gospel is the one where we learn about Joseph and Mary on the road, and there's no room for them. And so they end up in a place that has a manger. And Luke's gospel tells us about the swaddled Jesus. And we throw in all kinds of farm animals, any that we can think of. And that makes for a good Christmas card right there. Now, John's gospel, by contrast, doesn't inspire the same sorts of Christmas cards. In fact, when you hear the beginning of John's gospel, to me, almost a more appropriate setting is that we would find ourselves in those reclining seats in a planetarium. You remember the planetariums? And you look up at the darkened, black, domed ceiling. And before the gospel is read, everything is pitch darkness. And then all of a sudden, we start to see the stars. And then some planets, and it starts zooming by. And then you've got a voiceover of John's gospel. And maybe it's Dusty and Alex who read it for us. Or maybe they break the bank and they get Morgan Freeman to read from John 1. Because that's almost what I hear in my head. In the beginning was the Word. And the Word was with God. And the Word was God. He was with God in the beginning. John takes us way back to the beginning. Not the Bethlehem beginning, but the beginning, the beginning. And he tells us that through the Word, all things were made. And without Him, nothing was made that has been made. And in Him was life. And that life was the light of all mankind. And that is a cool description. Now, you may say that is a beautiful description. I still don't see the Christmas part of that description. Matthew and Luke, they give us the baby. John just gives us that big cosmic picture. The Word became flesh. The immortal became mortal. The immaterial became material. God became human and made His dwelling among us. Literally, God pitched His tent, His tabernacle. God set up camp among us. We have seen His glory, the glory of the one and only Son who came from the Father, full of grace and truth. So let me give you an image. I'll show you an image that helps me grasp the significance of what we're hearing from John and Matthew and Luke. But to get there, I want a little audience participation. Okay, so I'm going to show you a picture, and as you see the picture, I want you to tell me, what are we looking at? Go back. I think we missed it. All right, what are we looking at? That is the Heisman Trophy. So for those of you who are not football fans, not everyone is, the Heisman Trophy is the highest award that a college football player can receive at the end of a year. And it is also probably the most iconic trophy that is handed out, or certainly one of the most iconic trophies that's handed out. If you didn't know what it was, you might just think that there's an old-timey football player without a mask handing out high fives everywhere. High five. Give me a high, just running around, handing out five high fives. Okay, so one more audience participation. When you see the football player doing this, what do you usually call that in football terms? It's called a stiff arm. Now, again, for the non-football fans among us, that may just sound like a painful medical condition. You might want to look into that. Maybe you can get something to help you with the stiff arm. But the stiff arm is something that someone with the ball, running with the ball, usually does to keep other players at bay. You are keeping your distance. You're trying to keep them from tackling you. Okay, so why do I bring this up? Because God, being God, could have gone through the entirety of human existence and always given us the old Heisman, always given us the stiff arm, always kept us away, kept us at bay, running away after he got things going. That's some people's understanding of God. And in fact, that was a popular understanding of God at the origins of our country. Many of our founding fathers held that understanding of God. The deistic God, the clockmaker, the watchmaker, the one who made it all, wound it all up, got the clock going, and then ran away, keeping his distance, heading into an early retirement from there. But what is the Christian story? What is the Christmas story? The Christmas story is that God came near, that God came close and pitched his tent, set up camp among us. And it wasn't just that God made a way for us to go to God, but what does God do? God comes to us so that we could be close to God. The Word became flesh and set up camp among us. There's plenty of stories of ancient gods in the ancient world taking on human form or animal form for a brief time. But the story of Jesus is that God set up camp, lived life, a full human life, a common life, the life of a common person born into a poor family and an occupied nation from birth to death. And there are a number of stories, for example, of Zeus, the chief god of the Greeks, who visits earth in various forms. But Zeus, as I recall, visited like a weekend getaway for numerous romantic trysts. Jesus came to bring life and light. And Jesus came to experience life and darkness, life and death, which is a big twist in those stories. When God came near, God did not keep the ugliness of the world at bay. To live a human life, but a charmed life and protected life. The story of Jesus is that God purposefully chose to experience the fullness of what it means to be human, the whole gamut of what it means to live the mortal life. He's born a baby, and despite the Christmas song "Away in the Manger," which suggests no crying he makes, when God became human, when Jesus is born, he does what babies do. He cries as babies do. He eats at his mother's breasts and fills up Pampers as babies do. And it is extraordinary that God chose to become an ordinary baby. A little human being, just like all the babies who've been born into this church over the last couple of years. Beautiful, wonderful, but just little human baby beings. That is the God of the universe. God experienced it all, the highs and the lows, the ups and the downs, the love and the hate, the joys and the sorrows, the pleasures and the pain. He eats and he drinks and he sleeps. He breathes and he bleeds from human birth to a horrible, unjust death. Jesus goes through the full human experience. And the book of Hebrews tells us there's a couple of reasons that he does that. And one of the reasons he does that is to finally defeat sin and death, which had always held us in its grips. But there is another, also compassionate and very close reason we're told that Jesus does this. And it's all about empathy and understanding and relating in ministry. Hebrews 2:14, because God's children are human beings made of flesh and blood, the Son also became flesh and blood. It was necessary for him to be made in every respect like us, his brothers and sisters, so that he could be our merciful and faithful high priest before God. Then he could offer a sacrifice that would take away the sins of the people. Since he himself has gone through suffering and testing, he's able to help us when we're being tested. Or chapter 4, for we do not have a high priest who's unable to empathize with our weaknesses, but we have one who's been tempted in every way, just as we are, yet he did not sin. Let us then approach God's throne of grace with confidence so that we may receive mercy and find grace to help us in our times of need. It is extraordinarily powerful that the God of gods and Lord of lords, the one who was there at the beginning and through whom all things were made and without whom nothing was made that has been made, that God is able to say, sought the experience to say, I get it. I understand. I've been there. I feel your pain. I know your struggles. You are not alone. Are you hungry? Are you hurting? Jesus gets it. Have you felt alone over the last 9 months? Have there been times in your life where you have felt abandoned? Are there times when you felt forsaken? Jesus gets it. Have you been let down by people that you love? Have you had people that you were close to turn their back on you, especially during a time of need? Jesus gets it. Have you been tempted during a time of incredible vulnerability? Jesus gets it. Are you worn out? Are you exhausted? Have you been brought to tears by loss, by injustice, by all that is wrong in the world? Jesus gets it. Jesus brings hope because he shows the way to a better future, but Jesus also brings comfort because he comes alongside us and he understands us. During all of those times when our inner dialogue tells us no one really understands what I'm going through, Jesus gets it. One of the most amazing gifts that we receive at Christmas is the reminder of the empathy of Jesus, of the God who did not stay distant, who did not keep us at arm's length, who did not get the world spinning and then run away to an early retirement, but the God who came near to walk as we walk and live as we live, to understand what we go through, and to show us a way, but to also show us that He walks with us along the way. And because of that, empathy is an amazing gift that we can give others as well. So I want to talk for a few minutes about a place that may sound familiar to some and may not sound familiar to others. It is the Borderline Bar and Grill in Thousand Oaks, California. It was popular, frequented by college students who like to go there for live music and line dancing. And if you're thinking, okay, that place sounds kind of familiar, but I don't remember why it sounds familiar, it was just over 2 years ago now that a man entered Borderline and proceeded to open fire and kill 12 individuals and eventually himself. And it happened during a stretch where it felt like every month or every other month in our country, there was a different mass shooting that was going on. And many of you may remember that. And for those of you who are thinking, okay, I kind of remember, but don't remember this part of the story, there is a reason why it is especially close to our church. And I talked with this family before, for those of you who are getting nervous, like, oh my goodness, did you just surprise them with this story? This story hits close and personal to a family at our church because one of our own was there that night. Annabelle Childers was there that night, who grew up at this church and graduated from this church and is a student at Pepperdine, and her parents are Jill and JJ, and grandparents are Eddie and Catherine, and she was a student at Pepperdine and someone who was at Borderline that night with fellow students to enjoy a night of music and line dancing. And it was about a month ago now that Annabelle wrote some reflections on that night for the Spiritual Life blog at Pepperdine. And it is a powerful piece. And so when I read it, I gave her a couple options. I said, hey, what one, would you be willing to either interested in sharing this story, or two, would you be okay if I reference it and read a little bit of what you wrote? And she said, I'd rather not share, but I'm happy for you to share and read a little bit. And so I just want to read a little bit of what she wrote, because she did a masterful job. That night, there was confusion, chaos, and an immense amount of fear. I remember asking God, why is this happening? I remember waiting to hear if it was safe to come out of hiding, waiting to have statements taken from the police, waiting to hear if everyone was okay. With 2 years having gone by, I'm still wrestling with the question, what kind of person am I after this? As I reflect on the trauma of November 7th, 2018, I want to give it the importance it deserves, but to also move forward with an empathy that looks beyond my own experience. I've been learning that we as humans have all gone through exceptionally hard things, but I don't think we give each other enough space to grieve and then process or work through them. Life is really hard. COVID, isolation, the injustices in the world, they've all taken a toll on our minds and hearts, and I believe that it is okay to feel pain deeply. It's a beautiful silver lining that we can find a common ground in our experiences that allows us to be better friends and better people. I want to be quick to empathize with others, extend grace, and listen. I want to have come out on the other side of borderline, more fully embracing God's plan for me and more equipped with understanding the pain of others. I'm hopeful that we'll all learn to listen and wrestle and grow alongside each other. I'm hopeful that our pain lends itself to empathy, and our desire to see a better world motivates us to strive for a better way of living. Annabelle, thank you for that. Thank you for those words and that wisdom, because you have touched on what all of us know, but we don't always articulate. We all experience suffering. We live in a world filled with suffering, but we all experience it in different ways. We experience it in our own time, in our own depth, but no one escapes it. And so I pray that during those times, when you find yourself in the midst of those times, if you are in the middle of one of those times right now, I pray that you remember the message of Christmas. Yes, Jesus came to die and rise again so that we could be with him one day, but Jesus also came to live a life that we live, to better understand us, that the God of the universe says to us, I get it. I understand. I've been there. I've suffered. I know your pain, and you are not alone. The God of the universe draws near to empathize with us. And as you have received, give. The grace you receive, give. The patience you receive, give. The understanding you receive, give. Because people are hurting all around us. How do I know? Because they're hurting among us as well. That is part of the human story, the highs and also the lows. So the empathy you have received, give. You don't have to have experienced the same thing in an identical way to identify with suffering. You don't have to experience the same thing in identical way to identify with pain and loneliness, loss, regret, shame, sin. We all come at it from our own place, but we've all been there, and that is a gift that we can give one another. As we have received, we also give. I get it. I've been there. You are not alone.